Yes, indeed, it's on. Once again, you know what time it is. As the sound of Fade to Black blends in your eardrum, this is Anti-Robot Radio, and I'm your host, the fabulous Moonshine Brown. Welcome back. It's Saturday, you know where it's at. We're here all the time. I'd like to say hello to everyone. Welcome, welcome. We got an incredible show tonight. You know, we keep it incredible. This is the gate to the avant-garde. First of all, I'd like to give a special thank you and a shout-out to Survival Radio Network. That's the network we are on. And once again, those who tune in just a little late, this is Anti-Robot Radio. And I'm your host, the fabulous Moonshine Brown. So what we're going to do before we get it all set, and I tell you who my fabulous guest is tonight, we're going to pay the bills. Let's do that early, get it out of the way. We'll be back in a few. This is Anti-Robot Radio. What's on?
If you have elementary age kids, boy, do I have a book for them to read. It's called Dana the Procrastinator. Dana is an 8-year-old boy who loves to waste time, but his procrastination catches up with him when he realizes that he missed out on his own surprise. Well, I can't tell you. Anyway, check out this book at www.kidsread.com. That's www.kidsread.com and available on Amazon.com. You're going to love the illustrations and the audio-video CD-ROM, Dana the Procrastinator.
Survival Radio Network. You can't live without it.
Yo, it's Divinity Rock. You already know how we do, man. We all anti-robots, and you know you rocking with the best when you rocking with my man Moonshine Brown. Holla at your girl, mate.
More and more people are making their purchases online, and their number one resource is ShopSquare.com. At ShopSquare.com, they're committed to excellence and top-notch customer service. ShopSquare.com is empowering customers just like you by providing them with the best details online anytime. If you're looking for electronics, home decor, home appliances, sporting equipment, college wear, or fashion, ShopSquare.com is where you'll want to be. Go to www.shopsquare.com or give us a call at 877-659-0807. That's 877-659-0807.
What's happening? What's happening? We're back. We are back. We are back. Fade to Black. This is Anti-Robot Radio. Welcome back. Another wonderful Saturday. All of my anti-robot salute right now. Welcome to the show, the greatest talk show of its kind on the web or in the world. Hey, got a lot of things to talk about. First of all, man, I want to announce my first and only guest, for tonight, incredible brother. I'm sure a lot of people already know about his music and the other things he does. But if you don't, this is what this show is about. This show is to show you what you need to hear. Again, this show is to show you what you need to hear. So I have the pleasure tonight of interviewing brother Boston Fielder, creator of Mother Wit, creator of Herb Alt. We're going to rap, man. We're going to talk about the new album, PMS Junkie. We're going to talk about the documentary he has going up on Mother Wit. Talk about some other things. We're going to talk about the Herb Alt Festival. So that's going to be a great show tonight, man. Great show. So you know how we do here. What I want to do is give out the number to call in so that we have that in the way. If you're calling in, area code 917-932-1078. Once again, it's area code 917-932-1078. Now, remember, man, this is a free speaking musical independent forum. So check it. If I'm saying some things that you don't understand or don't like, if you have an opinion, call us up and let us know. We have a lot of great guests on the show, man. Call up and show the guests love, you know. Last week, great guest, Scenario Jarrell. If you missed that, you can go check out that interview. Great guest. That brother worked with everybody from, well, actually, he's worked with my guest tonight, Boston Fielder, Damon Auburn of Gorillaz, man, MF Doom. If you missed that show, go back and check that out. www.antirobotradio.us. Go check that out. That brother, Cool Joe Goodies work with. So, hey, man, if you're missing these shows, go back and check it out. Again, this is a show to teach you what you need to hear. If you're tuned in, you're hungry to hear what you need to hear. I'm leading you to the water. You got to take a drink. Hey, first of all, in the music business, we just had the Grammys. Grammy show. Opinions on the Grammy, I mean, this is my belief on the Grammy. I know one day there will be a musician in his room, four walls, bedroom. He may sleep in there four quarters. And he will create something that will be the record of the year for the Grammys. That's where our independent thing is going, and that's the beauty of the Grammys. I understood the whole thing even by way of wearing the black tie. I know they're trying to be as prestigious as the Emmy. Quick shout out to Dirk Diggler in the chat room. Thanks for tuning in. But I understand why they did the black tie thing. Understand this. And to people who were looking in your favorite artist or the song that you heard the most on the radio didn't get nominated, will know this. Grammys are not how many records that were sold. They're not how many times you hear them on the radio and once you're in the club. The thing about the Grammys are judged by the peer of the musician. It's judged by the engineer, like Neil Polk that we had on the show a couple of weeks. Judged by the artist and the producer like myself and Sleepy Brown that we had on the show. It's the A&R rep. It's the soundtrack director like Ali Muhammad we had on the show, Anti-Robot Radio. But it's all those people that judge what was the greatest contribution to music that year. So if you're looking at it, the Grammys is, I'm going to say this, one of the more important of the awards. So know that if you had a friend or artist or someone that you thought, because they got played the whole time and they jammed in the club, they didn't quite make the Grammys, then you understand what's going on with that. It's not a popularity kind of thing. We hope not. But this is my thing. The black and white tie thing, the thing about that is, of course, you know, and I'm all for raising the fist in the air and, you know, power to the people and all that. It's about that, you know what I'm saying? But people like The Dream going up there, you know, in his statement with the, you know, parental advisory hat and all that. And I understood the little slide remark that Jay-Z about talking about his hat. You know, but these are my opinions. The thing about it is, and I'll say it again, one day there will be somebody in the room that will create something that's going to have to be on the Grammys. And I'm talking to independent artists because that apply to you. A good record is a good record. It's going to have to breed. I mean, whatever you got your opinions about Frank Ocean, it was a tad different than what had been going on, which opens doors for other people. You know, some of my favorite performers on the show was actually, you know, I'm a Jack White fan, so I dug Jack White's thing. I dug the Black Keys, and my favorite was, I got to say, Bruno Mars and Sting and the Marlies. In short, music has to come back. Whether you want to or not, whether they try to kill it, your heart beats on a rhythm. Your life has a soundtrack. Please don't let that soundtrack just be bands and make a dance. Hey, we finna go to another song real quick. One of my favorites, Are You Gonna Go My Way by Lenny Kravitz. This is Anti-Robot Radio. Y'all know what it is. The Five is Moonshine Brown. We'll be back with my guest soon. Yes. Yes, indeed. We're back. We're back. This is Anti-Robot Radio for all my anti-robots just tuning in. That was Are You Gonna Go My Way by Lenny Kravitz. Welcome back to the show. This is Saturday, and we on. Let's look what we got. Got a few things. Oh, let's go to a caller real quick since we got a call up. Eric Cole 404, what you know? Welcome to the show. Anti-Robot Radio, you on?
This is Boss Man.
Boss Man, what's happening, brother?
Hey, what's going on, man? What's happening?
Good, good. Welcome to the show, brother. Good to have you on.
It's a blessing, man. It's a blessing down here in New Orleans. It's kind of working right now, and glad to be here talking to you, man. I've been listening to your interviews the last 2-3 weeks, man. You're doing a great job, bro.
Oh, man, I appreciate that, man. I appreciate you for listening, man. You know, just trying to spread some things, you know, give that alternative. You know what I mean?
Yep.
No, where you say you calling from?
This is Boston, man. Boston Field, brother.
Oh, brother, you on already? Wow. See, look what's happening. Look what's happening. I didn't know what happened. Wait. We got to do that. We got to do that all over again. Yeah, do that all over again because I got to bring it all right. Let's do that all over again.
Okay.
All right. So, look, anti-robots out there, forgive me. anti-robot salute. All my anti-robots, I would like to introduce to you my guest tonight, the very talented, the very creative, avant-garde Boston Fielder to the show, my brother. What's happening? You got to get the hands, you got to get the applause and everything. We can't just let you on like that.
Yeah, man. I mean, everything is good, man. You know, it's funny enough, I'll open up just kind of, it's funny, man. You interviewed Gennaro last weekend, Gennaro Jarrell. And actually, I'm here in New Orleans, man. We're working on his next project, man. I'm sitting in his house right now. He's in the other room. Yeah.
Wow. That's funny how things work. Tell that brother what's happening. Anti-robot salute to that brother. I had a great interview with that brother.
Yeah, it was real cool. He actually talked about a lot of things, man, that I wasn't aware of, you know, in terms of his musical history. So you're bringing stuff out of people, man.
We got to. We got to. I'm very glad to have you on the phone, the show, brother, because whether you know or not, I have been following you a little while back. I'll tell you this. My little drifts into, you know, myself, calling myself a funk rock artist, you start getting into certain things like just being the color I am, you start getting into the Black Rock Coalition, you know what I'm saying?
Right.
And I joined that. And when you start chasing that kind of like following, you start to see the players and who are the players and who things. So I ran across Mother Wit a couple of years ago, man. I want to say easily 5 years ago.
Okay.
Not more. Because you get into the Dragons of Zenith thing and you know what I mean? So I'm starting to see some things from, you know, so I even the Herb Alt Festival, without knowing that was solely attached to you at the time, I was on that. You know what I'm saying? It was already on the radar.
Yeah.
So it's actually a pleasure to have you on the show tonight, man, and to get to the people that don't know you, to introduce you more. You know, like we're sitting on the couch, you know, rapping and just sharing music things together, you know?
Yeah, man. Things have been real interesting. Just when I first kind of started doing the music thing, a lot of it was wholly intentional, you know, unintentional, to tell you the truth. Didn't grow up wanting to do music. Grew up appreciating it because, you know, some of my family members kind of worked in the business. They were musicians. And I tended to more just appreciate what they were doing, you know, but I was always a visual artist. Kind of my goal was to have a huge advertising and commercial arts firm, and where we focused on graphic design and kind of concentrated on building images for people of color, you know?
And
through a large part, you know, a lot of the younger days, man, I think I achieved a lot of success with that. I got to the point where I had clients like Coca-Cola, man, and Apple Computers back in the 80s, and did some work for National Geographic. So that was my goal. But music kind of found me, you know, and I guess I've been doing it now a good 20 years. Last few years have kind of been focusing on taking what started out probably being a little bit more experimental music-wise.
Right.
And kind of seeking to mainstream it a little bit more. Yeah, so that's kind of where I am with it right now. Just everything I'm doing now is about trying to reach more people through the music, but also kind of making sure that the type of music that I'm doing still resonates with me personally.
Okay. Yeah. I think without even getting into that, and we're going to play some of the songs, You know, I know always our goal is to find a way to reach more people, or I guess mainstream, you know, that sometimes it makes it feel like a bad thing. But my hopes, even on a platform like this, is to get it big enough that enough people know, well, you know, I always say kind of like increase their palate. You know what I'm saying? Like kind of like if your taste is a little better, you'll dig some other stuff. So it won't keep it in that, like, little pigeonhole. So I understand when you always say, you know, I'm increasing for mainstream.
Yeah, and, you know, there's the way I look at mainstream, you know, you have the ocean and you have the river and you have all the tributaries that kind of run out from a particular river. And the people living along that river, that can be thousands and thousands of people living along one river. They might not necessarily be aware of what's going on at those other tributaries. They're focused on that area that's kind of feeding them. So when I say mainstream, I'm more or less talking about developing a large enough audience where I can feed people. You know, when I say feed people, I'm talking about feeding the audience. I'm talking about feeding the people that I work with. I'm talking about feeding my family, that type of thing. You know, so it's. I don't think I don't look at mainstream as a negative thing at all. It's all perspective.
But you know what, Boston? I tell you this. I come from the believing that too. Also, that if you have that core audience. It's a matter that I think a lot of us, you know, as independents, man, we don't find a way to touch them and make it solely monetary.
Right.
They love us so much, but they don't support like that. And I think that's the biggest thing. We fall a lot of stuff, and the thing about it is I think the majors are coming to the point where the money's not the same. Like, when I was doing production back in the days where you know, you can go do a demo for someone, you know what I'm saying, and get $5,000 just for demo the song, even if it didn't make the album. Those days are gone. The 25,000, the 50,000 production, those are gone.
See, the $5,000 for the demo is the budget for the full album now.
Right, that's pretty much the budget, and you gotta like really look at that now. I think that. If they are falling, why even try to look for them to help like that? Because, you know, we're still dealing with them not understanding totally anything else. And being, you know, African American black artists, you know, we're judged immediately. And if it doesn't fit, it could be what they call what, too white to be black and too black to be white. Or you cut in the court right in that middle, then you won't survive industry wise. But I think that if you have, you know, 50,000, 20,000 hardcore fans and they're buying albums and they're supporting, they're going to shows, I'm saying 20,000 on the low end, you can survive and you can do good.
Yeah, it's possible. One of the things I talk to people about a lot, man, in terms of having a career in any business, it's any particular area of the arts especially, because, I mean, America's a beautiful country, but, you know, the arts tend to be undervalued, whether you're black, white, or whatever, you know. The arts are not necessarily put in the same light as, you know, if you're in law or if you're in, you know, if you're a physician or whatnot. So what I tend to do, because as you said a minute ago, man, the days of wine and roses with the $3 million signing bonuses for doing what maybe people would consider quality music. I know that's very broad, but those days are kind of done. But I feel like we kind of during the 80s and the 90s, during the gravy train years, a lot of us kind of got so tied into the concept of being millionaires and multimillionaires doing music that we've kind of lost focus on what's really important. And what's important is definitely the music. You know, the music is important, but also I have a thing, like I always say, if a doctor goes to school for 15 years, and can kind of max out making $90,000 to $150,000 a year as a doctor, there's no reason that an artist who is working 15, 20 years honing their craft should not be able to expect to earn, you know, to earn the same kind of living. Now, you're making $90,000, $150,000. You're not a millionaire, but you're living well. And that, to me, should be the goal. That should be the goal. But I think we've kind of lost focus on that.
I think also the appreciation of it. Like you're looking like right now. Let's just look for the appreciation. Of right now, you're working with another artist right now. You're doing things. The whole thing is we have this whole crab in a bucket kind of thing. We're scared to kind of like do things together. Like if I'm achieving something over here, it's all for the main goal. If you're a part of it, we're working towards that goal because some of the pieces don't fit without the others. And I think that just the pure appreciation of knowing that, you know, hey, this is a craft, like you said, 20 years of doing this, that you should get paid this. Don't ask me to do a show and not expect me to want any compensation.
I hear you.
You understand what I mean? Or don't expect, and compensation is anything, man. We, being an independent artist, we do a lot of bartering. If I'm rapping with you, man, and we do something, and I play a guitar lick or something like this, I may call you and say, you know, Boston, man, sing this song with me, man. Let's do something beautiful together and whatever. Or the same thing you're doing with Jarrell right now.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? And so compensation is not just money. It's just compensation of being appreciative. And nowadays people will ask you and they'll suck your blood. You know, that's the whole premise of the show, that they'll suck you and don't want to compensate. I mean, even with the promoters, you do a show and, you know, they'll love you to death on the internet. But when you have the show out, man, you can't, you know, you may get 100 people there, but you got 5,000 friends that love you and want the music. Or when you release your release and everybody loves it, I love it, it's the greatest thing ever, but they don't download it even if you give it away free. Support.
Well, I think we have to build, man. I mean, it's really not very, there's not much difference than it's been in the past in terms of, you know, you have the hardcore fans and then you have the people that you have to keep extending yourself to. The internet just makes us feel, we are reaching more people through the internet, but I really think it does just kind of come down to just being consistent and staying in people's faces, however you can go about it, and doing quality work, definitely. The quality of it is really paramount, I think. Yeah.
Right. And a lot of people think that independent does not mean quality, and that's not true. And when we start, you know, start playing music, we're going to prove that. What I want to do, Boston, I want to ask you one more thing because I know when we start getting into the music and dissecting everything, we might get off subject. So that's why I'm talking to you a lot right now. But I want to rap with you about Herb Alt, that whole program, that whole thing you got. I know the festival of the same name is on there. I know it's also media, and as you spoke, being a visual artist and all that, could you, you know, let's talk about that a little bit.
Okay. Well, Herb Alt is basically an acronym for Underground Railroad Broadcasting Alternative. And it's kind of crazy the way it started. His brother named Eric Coburn and I, he was a homeboy of mine. We kind of grew up in the same town in Mississippi. And both of us ended up in Atlanta at the same time. And he actually was managing NDIRE. And we, you know, just people and everything. And we said, oh, we were starting to meet all of these interesting artists in the Atlanta scene. I was managing a couple of artists. So I said, wow, man, it would be interesting if we put this kind of an event together where we could feature some of the artists that we are working with. And so he came up with the name Honey Magnolias. I don't know if Eric could listen to it, but it was called Honey Magnolias. And I guess we did it for about a year or two in Atlanta. And, you know, life kind of went in different directions and everything. And I was working in the film industry at the time, shooting a project called Cat Shown in Oz. And part of the story in Cat Shown in Oz, it had all of these alternative artists, but they were all preparing and rehearsing their bands, getting ready for what I was calling at the time an herbal convention.
Okay.
Now, it didn't exist in the real world. This was just part of the script that I had written. And, you know, we shot the film, and I ended up moving to New York. Well, no, we had shot the film, and in the process of editing and doing all the post-production, I started working with the National Black Arts Festival in Atlanta. And they were the first organization that kind of came forward and helped me develop Herbal. So we did several Herbal shows in Atlanta. And the whole the purpose of Herbal, the way I always saw it is because it's, again, Underground Railroad Broadcasting Alternatives. I saw it as a means to be able to take underground artists, you know, artists of all persuasions in terms of nationalities and race and that type of thing, but specifically underground artists, and being able to create avenues for them to kind of being seen in the mainstream, you know, kind of back to that mainstream thing again. Well,
okay.
I finished the film, went to New York to look to get the film licensed, and in the process of being there, I was trying to find artists that I could connect to. And what I ended up being told by a couple of friends that they were like, well, Boston, if you're looking for a specific kind of artist that you think has something in common with you, you should start performing again. So I started putting Herbal shows on in New York City. It started off being like Herbal, kind of a little, it was almost like a little semi-monthly deal.
Okay.
And it became popular enough, man, where we could turn it into a festival. And the festival is so time-consuming in a lot of ways because it takes a lot of work to do it that we don't really do the semi-monthly shows anymore. But that's something I want to try to get back to. And, you know, by 2014, we really want to start focusing on doing those shows because the festival tends to focus on visual artists, musical artists, theater artists. Just pretty much it's a multimedia festival, but we have kind of skewed more over the last few years towards working with artists who are somewhat more established in terms of their names. So I want to go back to doing the semi-monthly events because I think that's where we were more successful in terms of grooming artists who didn't necessarily have a lot of exposure or experience performing live, but I thought that music was really hip, you know. So that's kind of the basis of it. But really focusing on alternative culture in all of its forms.
And the documentary that you're working on, right? That's Mother Wit. That's the Mother Wit documentary, right?
Yeah.
And
yeah.
That's through the company too.
Herbal. Well, it's actually there's a brother who has kind of been following our music, I guess, for like the last 5 or 6 years. It's so crazy, you know, when you're doing shows, you never really know everyone who's in the audience. But when our photographer Ed Marshall would send me the photos at the end of the event or whatnot, I looked on, there would always be this one brother, kind of almost on the front row. And ended up finding out that he works in the media. He's been like an entertainment pundit on several, you know, national programs and that type of thing. So he approached me, I guess, about two, three months ago about the idea of doing a documentary on Mother Wit. So that's kind of been in process. One of the earliest stages of it was aired, last Tuesday, I think. It's really cool. I mean, it's definitely a interesting project, and I'm real honored that he has found enough in what we're doing to decide that it's something that he wants us to approach, you know? Yeah.
Yes. Okay. Hey, if you're just tuning in, if you're just getting in, you're late. This is Anti-Robot Radio with your host, the Fabulous Moonshine Brown, and I'm rapping with the very talented brother, Boston Fielder, creator of Mother Wit, founder of Herbal, having some good conversation with the brother. What we going to do real quick, Boston, we're going to go to a commercial real quick. We're going to come back and we're going to start spinning some tunes, man. I'm going to start with the songs that I like the best, you know what I'm saying? I like them all, but, you know, favoritism, you know how that is. But we're going to kick to a commercial or two.
Anti-Robots, this is Anti-Robot Radio. We're coming back. Fabulous Moonshine Brown, Boston Fielder. We'll be back.
Appreciate it. Appreciate you.
Two questions. How's your New Year's resolution going? And how can the world's leading weight loss challenge get any better? Well, the 90-Day Body Vi-Vi Challenge is offering you a chance to join the challenge for 90 days, 100% risk-free, 100% guaranteed. Go to 123shakes.com and find out why over 6,000 people a day are joining the 90-Day Challenge. Try on your own challenge for 90 days, 100% risk-free, 100% guaranteed. You're going to love this, or are you going to stay with your unresolution? Go to 123shakes.com. Get your challenge on.
Do you want to take your business to the next level? Ultimate Business Solutions provides the support you need to increase your customer base and sell more products and services online. Specializing in graphic arts, web development, and internet marketing, Ultimate Business Solutions creates the face of your business. If you're looking for a custom logo, dynamic website, or popping marketing material, call Ultimate Business Solutions today at 404-704-2197 or visit www.ultimatebizsolutions.com. Ultimate Business Solutions, let us create your future.
Yes, yes, we're back. This is Anti-Robot Radio. I'm your host, the fabulous Moonshine Brown. What's happening? Tonight, if you're just tuning in, my guest is Boston Fielder, creator of Mother Wit, Herb Alt. Brother Boston, welcome to the show. Welcome back. We're back. I also want to open up the call line. If you're listening, 917 area code 932-1078. Again, that's area code 917-932-1078. I'm rapping with the brother Boston Fielder, Mother Wit.
Hey, hey, brother, can you hear me, Moonshine?
Yeah, I can hear you now. You good? You
okay,
good?
Cool.
All right, we're back. The new project, or the most recent project, I must say.
Mm-hmm.
PMS Junkie.
Yes.
You know, artists, we always have a whole story behind the titles of albums and everything and inspiration. You know, explain to all the anti-robots out there about the PMS Junkie title.
Okay.
For the album.
Yeah, PMS Junkie, first of all, every time I say that title to anybody, I tend to put a lot of energy into what do I want this song to be called? What did I want this collection of songs to be called? Like, my first album was called I Was Raised Around Black Folk Too, but they did not know it. And it was real cool because it always sparked conversation with the press. So with PMS Junkie, what it's about is the PMS of it stands for Preemptive Military Strike. And every song on the album is kind of focused around what I call the political zeitgeist. It deals with the war. It deals with, a lot of the issues that we're dealing with as far as, marriage. It deals with, the health care. All of the issues that are kind of in the political atmosphere right now. And I put the album together over the course of about a year and a half of sitting in front of various political channels on the cable and kind of clicking through and just reading articles on the internet and just taking those ideas and putting them into song form. So there's a song on the album. PMS Junkie is basically about the actual addiction to aggression that we have. And, you know, I always try to tell women it's not about women. It's about the addiction that we have around the world, not just as Americans, but people around the world. We tend to be tied to aggression in a lot of ways. So PMS Junkie specifically is about that song. Then there's a song, God, what else is on there? There's a song, Lavender Machine Gun, that deals with Don't Ask, Don't Tell. There's a song, Give It to Me, which a lot of people in the past that have heard us do that song, they've assumed that it's about sexual energy or whatever, but it's essentially about fighting for the healthcare system. And what else is on the album? There's a song called Celine in America, which is a satirical take on the CIA and a lot of its shenanigans around the globe. So each song on the album essentially deals with politics and the preemptive military strike, which I feel like is preemptive military strike being that I feel like we are tied to, we act a lot more than we listen nowadays.
Okay. I got the feeling when I heard the whole project, and what we're doing is loading everything back up, so bear with me with all that, because we're going to play. We got plenty of time, brother. I'm going to play the whole project, and we're going to talk about it. I want to get a lot of the talking out to get to know you out now, because when we get into that, man, we're going to dissect the album. You know what I mean?
Can I ask you a question?
Yeah, go ahead.
When you first heard PMS Junkie, as far as the title, what did you think it was about? I'm always curious.
You know what? I'll tell you this. When I and without meaning to say it, it was visual for me, and I'm going to tell everybody who's listening to all my anti-robots, go check Boston Filter out. He's on Facebook. Go look him up. Go Boston Filter. Go type in. Go Google Mother Wit. You know.
M-U-G-H-A-W-I-T.
That's right. Go look that up for sure. And go look at the artwork. Even do this for me, Boston. Give them the Bandcamp page where they can go check the EP we're talking about so they can kind of, it's like an open book test right now. Give them that information.
Okay, it's www.urbalt, and that's urbalt.bandcamp.com. And when you go there, it has multiple albums that we've done as Mother Wit, that I've done as a solo artist, Boston Fielder, and also different artists that I've worked with over the years. So it's, you go there, you'll pretty much hear a large degree of what we've been up to.
So definitely check that out, and you'll see the artwork that I'm talking about. But I'll tell you, Boston, when I saw it, and that's before me hearing the music,
mm-hmm.
the actual visual, the artwork with everything in it from the baby's body and your head and the visual, you know what? I kind of took it very social.
Okay.
I took it as something's coming to a climax.
Mm.
I took it as, you know what I'm saying, very urgent. You know what I mean? That's before mm-hmm. me even hearing it, the artwork. And what I dug about that is, you know, man, for a long time, man, records didn't have that character, even from the artwork. You know, even if you're a sampler, man, if you're a DJ out there, man, and you're doing hip-hop or whatever and sampling and things, what attracts
mm-hmm.
you to records when you're digging in crates is the artwork.
That's the world I come from, man.
Looking at that artwork, too, and looking at the back of it, reading the credits, and seeing who did what. So the artwork kind of gave me that feel. I was almost in a state of mind, and when I started listening to it, I got like a concept feel to it. And I very much appreciate that, because that's what I'm into. You know what? So easy, so much on this show, I always talk about how that in the times that we are now, without even sounding preachy, that we ignore a lot of things that go on. And being a musician, an artist, you know, a poet, a painter, anything, I think our goals and our expectations is to show the world how we're feeling. And you can't tell me that every emotion that you have is a party.
Well, you know what? Somebody said that the artist's goal is to trouble the comfortable and to comfort the trouble.
I like that. I like that. And the beautiful thing about it is, and I'm glad you even asked me about what did I think about hearing it. Now I can actually get into, even before playing it, telling you what I felt about the music.
Mm.
The music, and everybody listening, you in? I know I'm stalling to get the music going to you, but I just want you to understand this. And it's real good that we're talking about it before you even hear it, so we can really give you the narration of it. The music, the first song I'm going to play is Celine in America. Just the you know what? When I heard Celine, man, I heard so many influences. I heard operatic pieces in it. I heard deep, funkadelic funk. I'm even hearing the way the vocals are stacking, how you sitting them harmonies in between. That's funk. I'm hearing dirty, dirty guitars that I always love, and just the soul. Man, I hear some Motown soul on the background.
Wow.
The bass line, it was really heavy and funky. And I like, you know, what I dig about it too is one of my favorite bands is Fishbone.
Mm.
And
mm-hmm.
To me, as a vocalist, I really dig what Angelo does as a vocalist because his thing is so carefree.
Yeah,
he's not afraid to try anything.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I dug about your stuff. You would do that riff or that note or that stack that is not common. You know, Joy does that too. You know, I think very, very, very much that's what I dug about it, the carefreeness. Now, it could have been, you know, organized. No, you know what I mean by that is like, hey, it's carefree, but it's very thought out. But
right.
It was beautiful, the expression. So I understand you saying that you kind of describe the music as experimental. So.
Well, it's all to me, it's all soul music, and not necessarily soul in terms of Aretha Franklin or Ray Charles, who I love both of those artists. But to me, it's just soul music, and not necessarily whatever comes up comes out, but I don't like to, whether it's as a visual artist, as a business person, or as a musical artist or a writer, I don't like to limit myself. So I try not to edit myself, but what I try to do is get it all out and then do the editing in the, you know, the post process, and try to make sure that when I'm refining the tracks or refining whatever the, you know, medium is that I'm working in, I try to make sure that I don't refine it to the degree that it loses that spontaneity that comes from when you're having fun, you know, when you're kind of just working in the moment.
Right.
But I have to thank you, man, for bringing so much light on the artwork. That really struck my visual artist ego. Again, that's how I got into being a creative person, man. And I kind of come from that generation where, you know, I love vinyl, and not necessarily as an artifact as it is nowadays. You know, people kind of look at vinyl as something to be worshipped from afar, and it's like it's this museum piece. But for me, I grew up on vinyl, and the thing that I probably miss most about going to the CD format was not the sound of the music, you know, the warmth. And I know there's a difference between the warmth and the digital, you know, the analog to the digital. The thing that I miss most was the artwork.
Right.
The artwork became so small, and now that everything is pretty much gone digital, you know, you're talking about compacting it even more. So it really undersells the artwork and the importance that had in terms of relaying the artist's ideas.
And I think at that time too, when we were looking at records, there wasn't videos like that. So you kind of like the artwork had to convey what this album meant. And a lot of times we don't do that anymore. We're kind of lazy with it. You do the album and it doesn't even consist with anything. It doesn't tell anything, or, you know, and that's what I dug about. Actually, when I went back and looked at a lot of the records that you did, they pretty much had that, you know what I mean? It told what we were kind of about to expect
Classic artwork was real good, man. I appreciate that. And right now in this digital format, places like Bandcamp and iTunes, I mean, that's going to be the last of where we see the album covers. I mean, realistically, the CD is going to be out the window after a while.
Yeah.
So
they'll be projecting the artwork and the music into our brains in about 20 years. The album will come out and it'll just look right into our brain.
I don't know how excited I am about that, because they might slip and fall and put Lil Wayne in there somewhere, and they'll be like, oh man.
Uh-oh.
Hey man, this is Anti-Robot Radio. We say all that here. But hey, one last question while we get you all set.
Okay.
Did you produce the entire record yourself?
Yes. Yes, the thing about this, the record we released before this one is called Men and Women, The Revenge of Uncle Baldy. And
right.
that album in a lot of ways is more of a band-oriented record. I think about every song on that album is the band. It's, you know, the band in studio. But the new album kind of goes back and forth between songs that I'm producing, you know, playing most of the track. And then band, you know, kind of studio-oriented band song. But, yeah, I did produce all of it, but some of the songs are arranged with the band and some I arranged myself. So it's, I mean, I love working with people. When I first got into the music thing, it was kind of sitting up in a studio alone and trying to pick out songs and express myself. But since I've been in New York City, you know, the time that I spent in New York has really made me appreciate working with, with other artists who are far superior on their instruments than I am. So, yeah, I think that's what the first album definitely represents that, but this new album is kind of a dichotomy of me doing stuff solo and then with the band.
Okay. And you know what, a lot of times, man, that's the greatest, you know, when I do my records, I like to kind of touch everything myself. I guess it's a personal thing. Even if I don't think I'm the greatest at that particular instrument, if I play it and I'm good, you know, but to get the emotion out, you know what I'm saying? It kind of feels a little more organic if I do it, you know what I'm saying? A lot of times trying to put your thoughts in somebody's head is a rough task in itself. So I appreciate it, man. Go ahead.
It makes the process take a little longer when I think about it, it can make the process take a little longer if you're recording it all yourself because you have to track everything, but it also can make the process take a little longer if you have to juggle band schedules too. So I guess there's give and take about it, but man, over the last week, I've been kind of going through the number of musicians that I work with over the years as part of my Herbal band, but also I have like a larger orchestra that usually can be between 15 to 24 people. And it's cracked like 93 people.
Wow.
Just over the years in terms of musical artists and visual artists that I've had been blessed to work with. Like some of my people that have worked with me for years now, like Lou Rossi, Martell Brown, Cameron Orr, V. Jeffrey Smith, this Meryl.
E. Jeffrey Smith from
the Family Stand.
Yeah, have a fan. Yeah. Family Stand. Yeah.
That's my man. Ben Tyree, the guitarist, is really kind of on the come up. I mean, it's just some amazing musicians who run the gamut from being like the younger hotshots who are kind of making waves right now to guys who've been in the business for years, you know, and still doing their thing, man, in a great way. So I've been blessed, man. I have really been blessed in every way.
No, it's definitely, man. I dig your career, what's happening. Hey, let's do this. Let's get into the music now. I guess we prepped it up, or the machine up. We about to get into it, man. I'm going to play the first one I dug the most. You know, I dug them all, but I want to play this one. Like I said, we're going to throw to Celine in America by Mother Wit. Boston Fielder, this is Anti-Robot Radio. Your host, the fabulous Moonshine Brown, rapping with the very talented Boston Fielder. This is Celine in America. We'll be back.
Yeah, the luxury of your life. number one. Deep enough horns to carry guns when there's nothing. Bust of the flag, mommy, arms and exploding shoes. I always love you. Believe.
Yes, indeed. Welcome back. Welcome back. Funky, funky. This is Anti-Robot Radio, your host, the fabulous Moonshine Brown. That was Celine in America by Mother Wit. This brother I'm rapping with on the phone, Boston Fielder. Yo, that's funky, man. That's heavy. I had to play that one first. That's funky.
Thank you.
Hey, man, I dig that all the way down to the kind of swing beat, off-tempo drum thing,
yeah,
man. I like, again, like I like the stacks on it, man. I like the in and out of the natural with the false. Man, hey, man, you did that. It's got to, you know what? I'm going to tell you something, and take it as a compliment, I hope.
Okay.
Because I was really into this genre of music. It sounds very black exploitation-ish. You know what I'm saying? Like, you know, Willie Hutch, Curtis, you know what I'm saying? Superfly, Curtis Mayfield. But you know what? It's also futuristic. That's crazy.
You know,
I mean, I guess, it, you know what I'm saying? It's way modern.
I tell people all the time that you should never leave your house in the morning without your own personal soundtrack.
That's right. Everybody's got to have their theme music, right?
Yeah, man, you got to have it. You know, whether you're writing it or somebody else is writing it, you got to have some sound,
some song that carries you through your day. Like today for me, it's been "They Won't Go When I Go" by Stevie Wonder. Right. I have not been able to get that song out of my head, and I've been wondering why is that particular song in my head, and it just dawned on me since we've been talking on the radio tonight. I've been traveling for like the last 2 weeks, nonstop.
Right. Right.
And I think somehow the words in that song have kind of embedded themselves in my consciousness. Yeah, yeah.
It touches emotion, right? It touches, you know what? That's what music is supposed to do, right? It's supposed to gather some form, like you said earlier. It's supposed to be soul music, not mean stomping, and you know what I'm saying? Soul, good for the spirit, way down deep, emotional music. And a lot of times, music doesn't have that heartbeat anymore.
Right, right.
I mean, I'm all for technology, but. But it still has to have a life cycle, you dig?
You know, I feel like there's a lot of music out there that's doing it. And part of what we do with the festival, we have been fortunate to be able to connect with a lot of artists who are somewhat mainstream and again, artists who are very underground. Like when we first started doing the Urbop Festival in New York, you know, we worked with Chip Malone for the first 2 years from TV on the Radio. Yeah, we work with Reese. And one of the crowning achievements for me personally was this past year, festival, we actually featured Leon Ware, who's Marvin Gaye's producer.
Wow, the writer.
He wrote and produced the entire I Want You album, which is one of my favorite Marvin Gaye albums. But, Leon, you know, Mr. Ware, he was our featured artist last year, man. That for me is, you know, my favorite artist, my favorite musical artist of all time. I have the triptych is Marvin Gaye, Alice Coltrane, Miles Davis.
Wow.
And
I can see that.
You know, I'll never have an opportunity at this point to work with either one of those artists. So a large part of what I've done with this festival every year is trying to connect to people who are in that light, who have worked directly with them or who have created music that I think is in that, you know, that's kind of pulling from that same stream. So it was, oh, my God, it was really great working with Leon. He did things in rehearsal. Like to hear him play I Want You solo on the keyboard.
Wow.
If the entire room froze, it was really an amazing experience working with him.
He still, the right chops is still up too, because I had the chance. Oh, we going back a little time. I guess about 96.
Okay.
I was working with an artist, Che Stevens, in Atlanta.
Okay.
And Che's very Marvin Gaye-ish, and Leon Ware actually wrote one of the songs for the album.
That was my
first ever like placement. So that was incredible. Just to get the writing he did, to see it have so much of that Marvin feel to it.
Mm-hmm.
You kind of didn't, at the time I didn't think that could be done again. It was so amazing, the textures they had in the music back then, that I didn't think it could be done, or just the way people express words. A lot of people don't know that. That's an instrument, expressing words the right way. Like, it was one thing to say right in your face, but to hear him write it, make it so beautiful. Something that may be something about, hey, I hate you to fucking death, but he made it sound so beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
So it was cool to watch that even at this time, you know. So I know that was special. I never got a chance to see him perform. That was probably huge.
Oh man, he is a showman. He's a showman. He's one of those people who walks out and he just has the audience in the palm of his hand, and it's not a hysterical performance where he's hopping around and falling on the floor or anything. He just has that gift for gab. You know, the banter is amazing. The music is very lush, and it's a great experience kind of working with and hearing the And then he's one of those cats, man, that more of us should know about. And I'm hoping that if there's any success that has come from the Herbal Festival, I'm hoping that we are shining light on people who deserve, you know, more exposure and accolades for, you know, for their work.
Right. No, I think it's very incredible what you're doing, man. Hey, man, the lines are open. Anti-Robots, area code 917-932-1078. Call in, give us a shout, give us your opinion. Rapping with the very talented brother, Boston Fielder. Boston, we're going to throw to another song, man. What you think about
okay.
that? I want to play right now for everybody, Lavender Machine Gun. So we're going to lay that on them. This is Anti-Robot Radio. I'm your host, the fabulous Moonshine Brown, and I'm rapping with Boston Fielder himself. We'll be back. This is Lavender Machine Gun. We'll be back to rap about this. Okay, I guess it didn't come up. Boston, you still there?
I am here.
Mm-hmm. All right, brother. We're trying to get that together, man. We will be playing that. We got plenty of time. But you know what I didn't ask you from the last song, Celine.
Okay.
In America. You chose Celine to be the first. Well, I played that first. Now, tell me, in the whole scope of the PMS Junkie spectrum of what does mean, what did Celine, what place is Celine in America in that whole picture you're trying to paint with PMS Junkie?
Well, Celine in America, you know, it's Celine in America is CIA. So it focuses basically on a lot of the different things that have happened in terms of our covert operations overseas, you know, and obviously I'm not tapping into everything that our country does for quote-unquote freedom, but I feel like it's something that should, you know, I wanted to address it in a song. And,
cool.
You know, but it also kind of deals with materialism and that type of thing. But the song on an album that I feel like encapsulates the entire concept is the first song, which is The Gorilla in the Room.
Right.
Yeah, and it basically, in a nutshell, deals with everything that I saw over the course of about a year and a half, you know, writing the music for the album. So I hope you'll play that one. I mean, it's very short, but I hope you'll play that one. You know, as the
no, we're gonna get that one in too. We're gonna play. Hey, we're gonna go through all of them as much as we can in our time. I'm playing a lot of the songs. I think that's very creative how you did the CIA thing. That makes me even like the song even more. So I dig that. I think we got a Lavender Machine Gun ready. So let's go to that one, and we'll come back and rap about this. This is Anti-Robot Radio. I'm your host, Fabulous Moonshine Brown. This is Lavender Machine Gun by Mother Wit, Brother Boston Fielder. Here we go.
Lavender machine gun. I can't marry, but I guess you can be homo. We get the blues, keep it polished down below. Pass the pistol, strike a pose.
Yes, indeed. That was Lavender Machine Gun by Mother Wit. Brother on the phone, we're rapping through tonight. This is Boston Fielder. Boston, yeah. My brother, let's talk about Lavender Machine Gun just a tad.
Okay.
Sonically, if I'm correct, but the majority of the music instruments in that was vocal, right?
Every actual sound that you hear in that track is unique. My voice.
I dig that. Mm-hmm. So even down, you know what? I'll tell you, I dig that all the way down to the fact that how each one, the bass line, how you even EQ the bass line so it has that depth. And I dig all that. That's very creative. Kind of like a doo-wop kind of thing, but a funked out doo-wop. kind of expression, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But I dig that. I dig that. What was the inspiration for Lavender Machine Gun?
I have a thing that anybody that has worked with me, like in a band situation especially, I have a thing that I do where sometimes I'll actually kind of work out parts, playing an instrument and sing it. But then sometimes I'll actually beatbox the parts.
Okay.
For people to hear and kind of learn the music or whatnot. And this was one of the songs that I kind of laid it down as a beatbox in the early stages of writing it.
Right.
And as the words kind of came to me, because, you know, sometimes you write music and you're not necessarily sure what it's about when you first come up with the music. You might have
right.
the melody or whatever. So I wasn't sure exactly what the song was about, but once I kind of realized, I said, oh, this is about don't ask, don't tell, and the whole, you know, the whole concept of how does sexuality work in the workplace and that type of thing. So I was
all
like,
right, okay.
I'm going to keep this all vocal. So that's pretty much how it came to be.
Okay. I dig that, and I understand that approach. Because even when you're looking at the title of the song, Lavender Machine Gun, you know that's the little oxymoron in the house. It's machine guns, you know, being destruction and violence, and lavender is all seeing kind of soft.
Right, right.
So I see the contrast in that. You know, that's very interesting like that. And like you said, it's sticking in that theme. So would it be safe to say this project is a concept album? As like maybe a Pink Floyd, The Wall, or something like that, a concept album?
I would say it's a concept album from the stance that all of the songs definitely deal with socio-political ideas, but I'm working on an actual concept album that starts with a narrative story too. So that's one of the albums that'll probably, I don't envision myself being done with it maybe until 2014, but it actually tells a story kind of like, you know, some of Bowie's early work and maybe, yeah, like you say, The Wall, so where all of the songs are definitely tied together to tell a particular story.
Tell me
don't
something.
You love those days, man, when the concept, those type of concept albums. I love those albums.
Yo, the concept albums, was it The Wall? You know what? When I remember being in and this was cool back then when you were in elementary school. I had a cool team. Might have been a hippie back then, you know, but he came in and he actually brought the wall for us to see.
Wow.
That actually blew my mind. I think it was closer to, you know, Christmas break and not too much work, but that blew my mind. He brought the wall all the way down to, you know, seeing the kids. Oh, man, that was wild. And just later on, going to college and getting a little, when you're in music theory, understanding what the real film was about and what the concept of the album of the lead singer losing his mind or going crazy. Like, it was
right.
You know, that was a pivotal point in my judgment of music in itself.
It's a hell of a statement for where we are right now, too, isn't it?
Right, you know? It's timeless, and that's the thing about it. I think, again, we back to music was an emotion and it lived on its own. And right now, we got fast food music going on right now. Right now, it's just, you know, quick in, quick out. And definitely, man, when you run across artists, and I'm glad that I have this platform that I can run across artists that I dig, that I think the rest of the world, just our section of who we're trying to deprogram can hear all that, you know, the other artists bring to the table. So that's, like, real cool. I see the concept in it. I know even if you weren't, you know, shooting for it to be a concept album, I actually feel the songs and how they tie together.
Mm-hmm.
So I think I want to kick to another song, but you know what I want to ask? As Mother Wit, well, with the project Mother Wit, how many songs does Mother Wit have? You know, for those who are new to the whole Mother Wit thing, want to go back and find the library.
Wow. There are actually two Mother Wit albums. The first one, again, being the Men and Women I Was Raised Around, Men and Women, The Revenge of Uncle Baldy, and then the PMS Junkie album. But I have been releasing music for almost 20 years under various guises. I've released music. I released music somewhat pre-internet, which is kind of crazy. Like when Lenny Kravitz's second album came out, we were both out on the road at the same time, and who else was even Hootie and the Blowfish was even big. So I've been doing this for a minute, but kind of in and out of it because, you know, you have a family and everything, man, and you're trying to live in the real, world. At the same time, so at this point in my life, I feel like the real world and my dream of really using my music as a form of expression to be able to help many, many, many people, I feel like they have converged now. So again, man, I wake up every morning saying I'm blessed, and I carry that throughout my days, and having people like you. You know, recognize what I'm doing and the people that I'm working with, you know, recognizing their efforts. It means a lot to me, and I'm sure it means a lot to everybody else involved.
No, that's real cool. I think too, and I want to ask you this, you know, because we throw to that, a lot of times, that's the selling point for artists, and, you know, which way you go towards trying to shop and get a deal, because it is supporting the families, maintaining your own lifestyle and trying to get through everything. And I think, you know what, I had a person once tell me, you know, the difference between being a major artist and an independent artist is that one is broke. And I told him, hey, man, I know a lot of major artists, and that's not true because we're both broke. If you go by,
I was about to ask you, was he talking about the major artist being broke or the independent?
Right, right. Which one was the broke one, right?
Right, right.
My thoughts on it like this is that I think if you're looking at your goals, and again I say this, if you're coming in and you have, which is considered very low in the industry, if you have $150,000 fans. Or 150,000 sales. If you're an independent artist, nine times out of ten, you're getting 70% to 80% of the sales of that, of 150,000. But if you're on a major label or something like that, you may be only getting 6 cents. per sale.
Right.
If that, and if you're in a group, you have to split the 6 cents. Sans TLC, if it's 6 cents and there's three of them, they got to split 6 cents. So they would almost have to go platinum to even see a little money, as opposed to independent. If you sell 150,000 and you're selling the record for 10 and you're getting 80%, you do the math. I think before it was any majors, anything, in the old days, it was all independent. They made a record, they got it to radio, they played the circuit because that's where the money going. So my question to you is, do you see being independent a day where, in the whole internet thing, do you see a day where more artists will be taking care of themselves in the art in the independent fashion? Do you
think
we're already helping that a lot more?
I think we're already there. I mean, when people tell me that the music industry is dead or dying, I don't necessarily laugh about it, but I don't agree with it, because when you look at all the multiple ways that we have to kind of deliver whatever we're doing, whether it be music, film, or whatever, we just have all these crazy delivery platforms. I mean, just the idea that you and I sit here talking on, well, I'm on, thank God, now an iPhone, and
right.
I can stream our conversation that we're having right now, probably, what, I don't know how long it takes you to put it up, but I'll be able to stream our interview back in just a few minutes on a phone. It's just the technology that we have available to us now is just incredible. So I think there are more people now making a good living in the music business than ever before. There probably just aren't as – well, I know there just aren't as many people making, again, the multimillion-dollar living in the music business. And, you know, depending on what your definition of success is, you know, that could be either good or bad, but I think it's good, personally.
Right. I mean, I encourage it. I say that because now, like you said, man, it's able to bridge the gap. And more people, I think we can survive, man. And, again, I like that you say that, man, that it's what you think your success is. If you can do what you love, put out what you love and get to your people, take care of your family, feed your kids or whatever, and still do what you love, that's success to me. You know, I've seen artists, major label, you know, that sell millions of records, and you see them on video, you see them on TV, you see them on MTV, you see them everywhere, and they cannot feed themselves. They can't buy a cheeseburger. So it's the whole, what do you think your success is? I think success is being like yourself, being there. We talking 20 years. I think success is when you created the Herb Alt Festival, giving out that platform, and as long as you've been doing that, I think that's success. It's all you know what people think of. You know, the first thing they think, man, you know, if you're doing good, you're supposed to be driving a Bentley. If you're not, then that's not success. But I think 20 years of performing and doing what you love is pretty successful, you know? So, I don't know, Boston, are you still there? I think we lost our guest. Hey, man, if you're just tuning in, he'll be back. This is Anti-Robot Radio. I'm your host, Thousand Moonshine Brown. Boston, you back? Yeah. I know it got kind of quiet. Yeah, I can hear you.
I can definitely hear you. Mm-hmm.
Hey, we were just talking about iPhones. We was bragging about iPhones. hey, you know what? That was funny, man. When Jarrell was on last week, his phone dropped. And I always say, hey, man, that's the robots that's trying to interfere with the transmission. So
okay. You know,
sometimes when the conversation gets a little overhead, it gets funny like that.
Right.
But I was just talking about making a living as an independent artist. I just think we have to use different outlets. We got to be creative with our approach to making everything monetary.
Yeah, and open, very have to be open minded, man. There's so many ways to do it now, and if we kind of attach ourselves to this is the way it was back in the glory days, we kind of miss seeing all these other opportunities, man. I think this is the best time in the music industry. This is the best time there's ever been. I mean, there's no reason for somebody, if they have a musical idea, there's no reason for somebody is driven to be heard. There's no reason. There's absolutely no reason to not be heard nowadays. If you're not being heard nowadays, you don't want to be heard. And again, I'll reference Leon again. One of the things that he and I talked about just during months of kind of working on the show was he was saying that there was a point in his life where he chose anonymity. And, you know, for various reasons, but he chose to kind of be in the background. He released music, obviously, you know, he kind of got his stuff out there, but he wasn't necessarily driven to, quote-unquote, be a star. You know, it was a choice that he made, and he was posing it to me. He was like, well, Boston, what is it you're looking to do? You know, are you looking to be in, like, every living room? Are you looking to be in everyone's home or what? And it was food for thought for me. You know, I was like, okay, what? I think I've always had a pretty good grasp of why I do what I do. And it started off being as simple as me wanting to have a means to be able to communicate with my daughter when she was really young.
Okay.
And then from there, it kind of expanded out to other people. But right now, I'm just in a place, again, I just keep going back to that mainstream. I want to be able to take a lot. I think I have something to say, and I think I have an interesting way of delivering it. And I think I know a lot of other people who have interesting things to say and really, really hip ways to say them. And one of my purposes is to just have it all be heard through whatever means I can access. I want people to be heard. People with good ideas, you know?
Okay. I dig that. I'm all for that. We definitely have something in common there. You know what I want to do real quick, man? Let's throw it to another song. You know?
Cool.
I want to play Two Fisted God. Hold on, my engineer saying real quick, wait a minute. But that's what we're gonna be running when that can come up.
I'm gonna ask you a question after this.
Okay. Definitely do that. I'm waiting for him to pull it up right now. We got plenty of time. One last thing, real quick. Could you give everybody all your information where they can find you at? Find all the information like Twitter, Facebook, the Herb Alt Media page, and all that. Could you
okay.
Get, you know.
Okay. Well, the Bandcamp where you can mostly purchase all of the music is www.herbalt, and that's urbalt.bandcamp.com, and you can access all the music there. Most of our web presence right now is at www.motherwit.com, and that's MUTHAWIT.com. Then we have a Facebook page, www.facebook.com/motherwit. The Twitter is at Herbalt, URBALT, and at Motherwit, MUTHAWIT. So, I mean, we're out there, definitely out there.
Nah, definitely. And all my anti-robots, go out and go check all those places. All right, let's throw to real quick. Let's go to Two-Fisted God. This is Anti-Robot Radio. I'm your host, the fabulous Moonshine Brown, and I'm rapping with Boston Fielder, and this is Two-Fisted God. We'll be back.
What about you?
God by Mother Wit, the brother I'm talking to. This is Anti-Robot Radio. I'm your host, the Fabulous Moonshine Brown. And I have the pleasure of interviewing the very talented brother, Boston Fielder.
Man, yes, can I tell you how much I appreciate that you actually played the entire song? I was sitting here tripping like, wow, this brother's going to play. He's giving the whole song love. That's real. Thank you very much for that.
No, it's all good. You got to play that one all the way through because it has so many different changes in the music. Goes through so many different, you know, vibes that if you don't get it all the way to the very last drop, then I think you won't get the whole meaning of the, you know, the feeling. Of
right. The right. Yeah, man, that song really has, that's one of the songs that I call one of the Motherwood Orchestra songs because it had so many of the musicians that I work with. D-Bass, Brandy Younger, who is like, she's like this generation's Alice Coltrane. She's a harpist based in New York City, and she plays with Robbie Coltrane. She basically has, you know, Robbie's mother's chair now, man, and she's incredible. Who else is on there? Ben Tyree, Lou Rossi, Merrill Jefferson. There's a lot of people on that particular record. Oh, Salakita Khalid, who's an Atlanta-based artist, Shanti Ong, another Atlanta-based artist. Both of them are doing the vocals, some of the background vocals.
Okay, tell me something. Most of our, I know Mother Wit, I read this, that Mother Wit is very entertaining. And I know you said this particular album yourself was mostly your expression alone.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have a favorite go-to person when you're doing these records, like, that you always collaborate with? You know what I mean? Like, if you're writing, do you do most of the instruments first yourself? Or, like you said, the whole beatbox, the... which is a technique that people don't know. Michael Jackson even did that.
For sure,
That technique is huge, and I dig you doing that. But do you have, like, a standard, like, core group of cats that you always use when you're making these recordings? And the reason I ask that because, and I know the sound is going to be cohesive because you're doing it, and it's solely you, but it has that same kind of feel. You know what I mean? It has a feel. And a lot of time when you're dealing with a lot of different musicians, it will change the feel, and your recordings have that feel.
Right. Well, I mean, that's definitely it. I have a core, but the core has kind of changed a lot over the years. And again, one of my reference points, and God knows I'm not trying to put myself even in a sentence with Miles Davis, but I do use a lot of his approach in terms of I enjoy working with younger people, with younger artists, because I think they challenge you in a way that working with maybe more seasoned artists don't sometimes. But I also enjoy working with more established artists because they help teach the younger artists, you know, about professionalism and craft and being true to your word and that kind of thing. So just trying to have that balance. But my core has changed over the years. Like, that was a core of people that I played with in Atlanta, but when I moved to New York, it kind of changed. And the initial group of people that I played with in New York, you know, you work together, everything is in that season, and they've kind of gone on to do their own thing, and they're doing great work, I think. But the core people that I tend to play with right now at this time, the people that I would say this is the core of Mother is Lou Rossi, guitarist, Merrill Jefferson, violin, Cameron Orr, violin, Martell Brown, bass. There's a cat named Daniel Nurse that's been playing drum with us. Hector Rivera's percussionist. Who else got these? Oh, Jeremy Clemens has played a lot with us on the drum. So it kind of varies, but usually most of the shows we do now tend to be like 5 to 6 pieces if we aren't doing an orchestra show.
Okay.
But all of these guys, all of them have their own projects outside of Motherwit. So, again, I'm thankful that they take time to kind of share their skill set with me.
Hmm. Okay. I want to ask, when usually are the Herb Alt festivals? When do they usually...
In the past, it's generally like the last weekend of June in New York City. One of the things that we're doing this year, though, we're going to have it the last week of June in New York City, but we are working really, really hard on expanding a date and expanding it out into a date in Atlanta, Los Angeles, and Chicago.
Wow. Okay. Okay. Definitely. That's going to be incredible. All of those hubs are great grounds. That's going to be incredible. Tell me something, man. I didn't even touch on this because we got far and we keep mentioning New York and the Atlanta connection.
Mm-hmm.
How did you get to New York? Tell me that whole story about getting to New York. And I understand, you know, the travel because of music. It is what it is. New York has so much history in music that I understand is a little more progressive, but what I give Atlanta credit for is it has progressiveness there, too. For Atlanta to be the so-called country, you know, down south, Atlanta is very progressive. How did that whole, you know, change come about?
Well, you know, I feel like I'm certainly not an authority on either city in terms of how the music scenes have evolved, because In a lot of ways, when I was in Atlanta, I was kind of a loner. You know, I worked, because when I got started, as I said earlier, I was kind of doing a lot of solo stuff in studio. But in the process of kind of getting out there a little bit more, I had an opportunity to work with a lot of the artists. But New York has probably been the ground where I've kind of gotten out there more, working with more and more people as far as like other musicians. But the primary difference, I would say, between, and maybe this is not the question you asked, but the difference I see between the artists in New York and Atlanta, and this might be generalizing, I think New York is probably, that seems to be more of a concern with experimentation, maybe in New York City, and I think it's because of the jazz. You know, it's such a stomping ground for jazz. And
right.
So I think the experimentation technique at all costs. So that gets you a particular kind of energy with the music that's produced in New York. Whereas in Atlanta, to me, you know, that soul, that church thing is there. But there's also,
right.
you know, all kind of precedents for experimentation. I mean, all the people we consider, James Brown, Little Richard, Sam Cooke, all, you know, Elvis Presley, I mean, just all of these people, B.B. King, Johnny Hooker, all these people's energy is a southern energy that has kind of gone
right.
out into the world and affected the way we hear things. So I feel like a lot of the music that comes out of Atlanta, even, you know, the trap stuff that some people kind of look down on, it has, I think a lot of that music even has some of that magic. It has some of the magic in terms of certain artists. It still has some of that magic, but a lot of the music is missing. So for me, again, with Herbalt, I feel like part of my goal is to take that magic from the South, that earthiness, that soulfulness, and kind of combine it with the technique and the desire for experimentation that's in the North, and see what happens when you combine them together. Did I answer your question? I think I answered your question.
Yeah, you definitely did. So I got to ask this question. Do you think if that Herb Alt could have been started anywhere else other than New York?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Okay. Again, it started in Atlanta. I mean, it started in Atlanta as far as like the initial events, but the idea of kind of producing events, I actually, when I was in graduate school, I lived in North Carolina, and I actually booked the Bad Brain. I booked Fishbone, like, way, way back in the day. And it was before I actually was producing music myself, but I was always into kind of alternative music. So
right.
I think there have been various people who've done things very similar to what I'm doing. I'm not assuming that it's something totally out of left field. Like that, you have the Afropunk people who are doing that thing very successfully in New York. I'm real proud of them. You know, the Black Rock Coalition has been around for ages. I think there's a lot of positive energy out there that's creating vehicles for people to be heard, and where we can and where I can personally, I like to support it. But I think what I do is definitively Southern, and I stand on that. I mean, I consider myself a Southern boy, and, you know, I'm real proud of it, and I think this Southern vibe definitely informed my music.
Okay. You know what I want to play? I want to play She Doesn't Recognize Me No More. So the thing is, my engineer Clark, if you're listening, we're going to run that. You're going to hit a bed first. I'm going to talk to you for a little while. We were talking about technology in itself. I'm talking to you from the East Coast, Miami, in Louisiana, like right now. We actually in the middle of a storm.
Oh, really?
And all the power is out. But we still have this interview. That's how we do that. So we're going to keep going. So my engineer, we're just going to, if the song comes on, I'll announce it again, but we're going to keep talking, man. What I really want to ask you, big question. I know you say we're getting back on the thing about mainstream again.
Mm-hmm.
For the outlets, when you're saying that you want to reach mainstream,
mm-hmm.
and it's outlets, when we're saying mainstream, you know that they're going to try to categorize your music. In the scheme of mainstream, how do you see the music categorized?
Mother Wit music, you mean?
Mother Wit. I mean, or Boston Fielder or whatever you're trying to achieve. Because Mother Wit is Mother Wit, but I really see that entity being Boston Fielder.
Well, yeah, it's an extension of me for sure, yeah. I would definitely say that I don't necessarily think that what I do necessarily fits in a particular category. I mean, I tell people Herbalt, but the tagline for Herbalt is everything and nothing. So that pretty much says that I feel if you're into good music, and this might be a cop-out, Moonshine, but I think if you're into good music, if you're into feeling something, if you want to actually feel something, whether it's revulsion, love, you know, you want to have fun and, you know, find something humorous. I think it, all of that is in mode with music. And, I listen to country music. I listen to jazz. I listen to soul. I listen to avant-garde jazz. I mean, my cousin was a drummer for Sun Ra. My uncle was Elvis Presley's vocal and guitar teacher back in Tupelo back in the day. So I've kind of been around it in some interesting ways over the years. And what all of the artists that I have admired, and artists as well as people who are just living their life, is people who don't edit themselves, who are very much into this is who I am and trying to communicate that to people. I mean, it's hard sometimes, you know, but, you know, that's part of the struggle is making sure that you're heard.
Right. Okay. I definitely, man, when I hear the music, man, I hear all the influences and understanding that, knowing that, you know, popular music likes repetitiveness, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. They like cookie cutter things. And like, again, I love music like what you're doing, because I think, again, if we increase the palette, there is an audience for it. There is a mainstream for it, you know?
Right.
And, hey, man, I keep saying doing what you're doing. I very much would like to, you know, I know that you're touching it. And you know what kind of bothers me, being in a city like Miami?
Mm-hmm.
And you would hope that, you know, when I do shows here, most of my shows are crowded with Latin people, you know, our lighter-skinned people. You know, a lot of us don't come out to the shows like that. They love us to death, but most of the shows are not attended by us. So
that
my thing is,
that bothers you?
You know what? I'd be lying if I said it didn't bother just a little. You know, I don't mind, man. I want to play the who digs it. You know what I'm saying? So whoever gets it, gets it. You know what I'm saying? I have love for that. But sometimes you would like to see a couple faces that kind of look like you sometimes.
Right.
Just appreciate it. You know, just understanding what it is. And it's kind of sad sometimes that they don't get that appreciation. Or you don't get that respect of, oh, you're that. You know what I mean?
Why do you think the audience is skewed that way for you?
You know what? Well, I can speak on this side of what's happening on the planet.
Okay.
A lot of it is we get stuck into this thing of we don't create no more. Even down here, they're taking music out of school. So, you know, the lost art of playing an instrument or the lost art of anything experimental or knowing who Miles Davis is or knowing who Outkast is at this point is losing every day. So they'll go to someone who doesn't, you know, necessarily play an instrument or have thought-provoking music as opposed to going out and seeing that artist that is doing some cutting edge. A lot of times I would go to a show, and you do a show, and you have to get booked with artists that are not like you.
Right.
You know? So your audience is going to be a different audience. But I learned that audience really dig you. No matter where you travel, they dig you. And I guess a lot of people say, yo, don't worry about who comes to the show. Don't worry about if they like you. But sometimes you kind of want to see some people like you. I don't know. Jimmy.
Go ahead.
No, I say, well, you know, Jimi Hendrix didn't get that kind of, you know, and not even liking myself to Jimi Hendrix, but he didn't even get that he had to go somewhere else to get that too, and we didn't respect him at first.
Right.
I mean, I don't know if that's our plight.
You know, I can say, I can only speak for myself in this sense. My audiences have always been very mixed, ever since I've been doing this. And I can't say I have an idea of why it happens like that. I have an idea why it happens like that, but I can't say I've got it codified to a science where I could say, okay, this is the reason. But my audiences have always been mixed. And I feel like when I've heard your music, I mean, I've listened to your music, there's no reason that your audiences shouldn't be mixed. Because your music is all about being eclectic. You know, from everything I've heard of your stuff, it's all eclectic music. So what I want to say to you, just since we're sitting here on the radio talking, I definitely would like to bring Herbalt to Miami. I would like to do something in Miami because it is a market that we haven't necessarily penetrated right now.
Right.
And I feel like the tools that we kind of have, the resources we have, we could probably cultivate something that's there that maybe,
right,
because you're there kind of banging the drum yourself, it sounds like, we could,
right,
probably help kind of shake the tree a little bit, you know. So let's keep talking on that end.
Nah, hey, that sounds like a beautiful idea. You know, because I was even talking to my owner of the network, Clark Garrison. We were talking about doing a big show down here, and I think the Herbalt thing would be perfect. I think it'd be an incredible thing.
Yeah,
definitely, it is a beating. I want this so bad for this end because we don't have it. A lot of times I go through shows and on the West Coast,
mm-hmm,
or you go to Atlanta and it's never here. And I know, mm-hmm, there is an audience here. We just, it's kind of rough to pull it together, but
yeah,
I think that would be like very solid. I'm all for that.
Yeah, let's do it, man. I mean, I've seen the stories and I've heard the stories of people who, like, they're performing for audiences that are outside of kind of their cultural experience. But that is not my story, and I'm thankful for it. But I think a lot of it is just a matter of kind of pooling your efforts with people, you know, with more people, you know, who maybe coming from outside sometimes even, because you know how it is, the local. I always say the local artist, when you get the local artist tag, it can be very difficult. You know, it can be make things very difficult. So sometimes it's working with people maybe who are from the outside. And, you know, it's part of the band experience, too, when you bring in people from the outside. They have to maybe look at things a little bit differently. And I know that helps me. So, yeah, man. But what I've heard of your music, I think is wonderful, and there's no reason you shouldn't be playing for people who are just into alternative and eclectic music.
I mean, I appreciate it. We definitely got to do the Herbalt thing here. I got a venue for us. We definitely can put that together. We got to rap more about that for sure. And the show is behind it. You know, the show is behind what you're doing, man. Again, this platform, man, I was thankful. I actually got the show from being interviewed by the brother who's the owner of the network, Survival Radio Network. And this is Survival Radio Network on Blog Talk. And Clark interviewed me. And my brother, he's a good guy. He's also doing my engineer. We're pumping it. The show on its first takeoff, and it just tells you the audience is there. The show was over, the first show was over 2,500 listeners.
Okay.
By the second or third show, it was easily 5,000 to 7,000 listeners. And here we are upward into the teens of the listeners, so we know that it's an audience for it. It's
absolutely
definitely an audience. We're getting, on my Twitter, on the Anti-Robot Society and Anti-Robot Radio Twitter, we're getting people as far as Japan and, you know, Taiwan, you know, we're getting overseas, we're getting a lot of West Coast because we have had a lot of West Coast artists. One brother who told me to give you a shout out also in the chat room, Blackbird. I don't know if you're familiar with Blackbird.
Oh, man, that's my man, yeah.
Yo, he spoke so well about you. Blackbird was on the show. He was, you know, Blackbird, if everybody listening was on the show from Los Angeles. This brother spoke so well about you. His exact quote was this. you were one of the only artists that he respected, as, and he looked up to you as almost like a master teacher to him or a mentor. And he had a lot, you know. I'm sure he's listening. I'm sure he'll call in, or, you know, West Coast is a little off, but I'm sure he's going to listen and talk to you. But he spoke very well about you.
Well, it's humbling. It's definitely very humbling. Because Blackbird is an amazing artist, and he's been doing it for a minute, you know. He's been doing it for a minute. For me, anybody that, the word I always come down to is just communicate, man. Anybody that's really genuinely trying to communicate with other people, I'm just, as much as I can, I try to support them and help, you know.
That's what we're talking about. And what was cool about this, man, everyone I've interviewed, man, we're somewhat family now. So that makes it really cool.
Mm-hmm.
But, hey, Boston, you know what I want to do? I want to run into another song while we got time.
Cool.
Let's do She Doesn't Recognize Me No More.
Okay.
And we'll come back and talk about that. All right, this is Anti-Robot Radio. I'm your host, the Tyler's Moonshine Brown. This is She Doesn't
Recognize Me No More by Mother Wit. Rapping with the very talented Boston children, looking back. Anti-Robot Radio.
When I come home, she lay next to me. She won't even notice that I'm gone. When I come home, she'll take my hand. There's a girl in the back and she's crying. There's a girl in the back and she's lying. She don't recognize me no back, and she's testing me. Oh, she's heard the writing on the wall. He said from the whole thing, we
Yes. Yes, indeed, brother. We're back. This is Empire Robot.
Bob Radio. That was She Don't Recognize Me No More. Boston, my brother.
Hey.
Can you hear me? I dig that one, man. Let's talk about that a little bit.
Okay.
What was the inspiration behind that one?
That one is definitely dealing with, you know, we since Iraq, you know, in the Middle East, we've really kind of put our flag down in some respects over there and have maybe not considered the long-term effects of it. And I look at that, so that particular song is about soldiers who've gone off to fight their battles and sometimes haven't returned or have returned and are in positions where, you know, the war has changed them forever. You know, whether it be them personally, you know, whether it be them directly, or it's changed their family. I mean, you have stories about people who have had children, you know, while their wives, let's say, have had children while the father has been off the war. When he comes back, the child doesn't recognize him. Or you've had soldiers who've gone off the war and they've been maimed, and when they come back, you know, they obviously don't look the same way that they did before they went over there. Or you have soldiers who go off the war, and when they come back, they're having psychological problems, post-traumatic stress disorders or whatever, and so they are no longer recognizable as the people that they were before they went over there. And that, to me, I think our country does a much better job in terms of maybe respecting soldiers now, as an example of how poorly people were treated during the drawdown in Vietnam. So I think we've kind of learned from that, which is something to be somewhat proud of. But I think we still have to be a little bit more cautious about how we embed ourselves in other people's countries. So that's basically what this song is about.
Okay. I dug that song. Tell me something. And we're going to play another one. I got time. I think we got a little more time to play one. I'm going to play PMS Junkie, the title track. But there, I want to compliment you because, man, I dig the way that you hit a lot of the substance but made it clear. It's almost like sometimes you can write a song that's so brass and it's in your face that people don't really get the understanding of what you're trying to get across because it kind of scares them.
Right.
And you find a real eloquent way of passing that thought through. You know what I'm saying? Like an injection in the vein. So I dig that.
Thank you. That's a nice way of putting it. I have to use that in the future.
It's yours. You can use that. But hey, definitely. You know what I want to do real quick, and when we come back, I want you to give them the call letters again. Anti-Robots, if you haven't already checked this album, EP, this project, the name of the project is PMS Junkie. You can find that on Bandcamp, on Mother Wit, URB Herb Alt. Go look for this album, man. This is a great album. It's a pleasure to have this brother on the show, man, and to be able to talk about this. Let's just call it a concept album. So, look, Boston, we're going to throw to one more song before we go. PMS
okay.
Junkie. And when we come back, we'll talk about that. This is Anti-Robot Radio. I'm your host, the Fabulous Moonshine Brown, rapping with the very talented Boston Fielder. This is PMS Junkie. We'll be back. Robot Radio. You only gonna hear that here. Ha ha. This is the Fabulous Moonshine Brown. I'm rapping with Boston Fielder, Mother Wit.
Yes.
Another incredible song, my brother. Another incredible song. That's the perfect song for the title track, PMS Junkie. Let's talk a little bit about that real quick while we got a little time.
Yeah,
give us some background on that.
That song is probably closer to some of my earlier music that I used to do. When I first got into doing music, man, it was all about experimenting, learning the equipment, figuring out how to play instruments and that kind of thing. But also, again, having grown up around a lot of avant-garde jazz and soul music and rock music. So those were my reference points for it. But you know, as with anything, as you keep working, I guess you develop, you keep working and practicing, you develop a more control over your paints. And so
right.
PMA Junkie for me is, I mean, some people might hear it and say, oh, it's not mixed for radio or whatnot, but it's mixed a particular way for me that references how I got started. And all the music that I do isn't necessarily for radio consumption. Some of it is just an experiment for me to try to get to a particular sound. And
right.
the people, I tell you, man, the people that were around me when I worked on this song, it really kicked my butt from a technical standpoint. It
okay.
really, it was a battle trying to get this thing to where it is right now. So I'm really proud of this one, you know, from a technical standpoint, but also just, you know, I think it's probably one of the simplest songs I've ever written lyrically. But, you know, and it kind of is counterbalanced with the music. But on this particular track, man, it's like Melvin Gibbs. I don't know how many people out there are familiar with Melvin Gibbs, but Melvin Gibbs is like, played with the Rollins Band. He's one of the founding members of the Black Rock Coalition.
Guitar player.
Bass player.
Bass player, okay.
Ronald Shannon, you know, worked with Ronald Shannon Jackson, Power 2. I mean, this guy is a master musician, so very honored that he's on there. I mean, PMS Junkie to me just, it definitely has all of the elements. It has all of the elements in this one song that I think are dispersed throughout the album. It all kind of comes together in this.
No, I feel it. PMS was great. I hear it all, and I understand what you're saying, not mixed for radio, but I hear it. I actually like the imperfectionist of it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I dig it. I hear it. You know, I understand it all. I understand the pictures you paint with it.
Yes,
I
thank
definitely.
You
know, I'm getting the wind down signal. But you know what I want to do first? I really want you to give everybody all the info again, so that know we'll be playing this. You know, this whole interview for the next week. So if you missed this or you're catching the tail end on this Anti Robots, we'll still be running the show. My West Coast people, you'll be hearing again soon, immediately after we get off. Boston, give them all the information where they can find you at.
Okay. www.motherwit.com is like the band address. Then www.herbalt.bandcamp.com is where you can purchase quite a bit of the music that we've released over the years. www.facebook.com/motherwit is our presence there. And with Twitter, at Herbalt and at Motherwit. And the Herbalt is URBALT, and the Motherwit is METHAWIT.
Right. So definitely go check that out. You won't be sorry about that. It's definitely, hey, man, ear candy, just for your ear. Hey, brother, I very much appreciate you having on the show, man. It was a stone cold groove. I'm glad we got to do this again. Matter of fact, we need to talk more even after the show, but very much a pleasure to have you on.
Cool. Thank you for having me, man. I mean, I was telling somebody the other day, your delivery on the radio is very comfortable. I mean, it definitely creates a living room environment, you know?
That's what we're going for, the whole just vibe. If we were there and we had this talk, I would want it to feel like that.
So keep it up.
Definitely, man. I'm supporting what you're doing, man. We here, man. We definitely got to talk some more, man. I appreciate you for gracing the show, man. Definitely.
Absolutely.
All right, and that was Boston Fielder, Anti Robots. Please go check that brother out. You don't want to miss this creative artist himself. Thank you for being on the show. This is Anti Robot Radio. Hey. Another wonderful show, another great artist. Every Saturday, 7 p.m., we'll be doing this. Anti-Robot Radio, your host. This is on the Survival Radio Network. I'd like to give an Anti-Robot Society salute
to all my society members, Big Rock. I got my brother in the studio with me tonight. A break from my EP that's coming out, The Omega Syndrome, coming soon, finishing that up. You know, that's coming soon. So a nice break to do this show. Wonderful show. Love the platform to be able to talk to brothers like Boston Field and spread that whole message. Anti-Robot Society, salute out to Remedy, Star Diva. She's got a performance. If you're in Miami, she has a performance coming soon at the stage. Go check that out. It is going to be an experience. Also, Anti-Robot Society, salute to Fudaculture, who's also going to be performing that. It's going to be a family thing, so go check that out if you're in Miami. Shout out to everybody out there on the airwaves. Big shout out to my three little girls. I always do that. It's bedtime right about now. But a shout out to my beautiful Kyla Simone, Alana Love, and Khaleesi Mon. My babies, it's time for bed. Daddy, love you. Hey, like always, man, I like to spread love. This is what this is about. This is the deprogramming show. We're here to change your thoughts, change your mind, and take you further. Hey, we do this shit even in a blackout. It's blackout here in Miami. The storm is rolling. We do it, whatever. We doing it. This is Anti-Robot Radio. We going to be here. They can't run us off. Cyber's Moonshine Brown, that's how we do it. Till next time, every Saturday at 7 p.m., we out here signing off. Survival Radio Network, Anti-Robot Radio. Peace, love, death to all robots. Wow, we out.